Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Stimulating the rapid firing of electrolytes to speed through the brain, leaping the synapse gaps, making the connections between facts to brilliant insights. So, if you notice your head glowing, don't be concerned. It's all part of the brain massage experience. All of our attention is being directed to Japan and Libya, for obvious reasons. I'll be addressing some very interesting insights, certainly about the Libya situation. If we have some time, I'll get into the Japan situation as well. But there are some warning signals coming out of Wisconsin that should seriously alarm every God-fearing American patriot. And even the atheist ones. Anyway, bureaucrats are a necessary, I'm not even going to say they are a necessary evil. They are an unnecessary evil. I'm just kidding. In fact, I have had many happy experiences with bureaucrats, really. And I'm talking about the people who work for various government bureaus, by the way, which is, quote, an office or department for transacting particular business, end quote. And we usually think of bureaucrats as employees of the government serving in a government department. But really, now, can you imagine a world with no bureaucrats? Well, actually, I can. But you see, this is a tough one because so many of the government departments are necessary. And yet, so many of them are unnecessary. Like the education department, for example. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's take an honest look at government bureaucracy. And this will provide a deep analysis of the situation that developed in Wisconsin. First, did you know this was not even a word in the English language until about, 1913 or somewhere in there? At least it was not one that was included in Webster's 1828 edition of the Dictionary of the English Language. You will find bureau, and it is defined as, quote, one, a chest of drawers, two, an ambassador's or secretary's office, end quote. Interestingly, in 1828, the word in Spanish referred to, quote, a court of justice for the trial of persons belonging to the king's household, end quote. Now, the French, however, had already developed the word bureaucratie. My French accent leaves much to be desired, I admit it. Anyway, by 1818, the bureaucratie was a word that I understand Jean-Claude Marie Vincent de Gournay is credited with having invented in somewhere in the mid-1700s or late 1700s, although he didn't invent the phenomenon he described with the word. The word is derived from the word bureau, which, by the way, referred literally to a desk. The French identified government officials with the desks upon which they did their work. In this way, a government department came to be called a bureau. Jean-Claude Marie Vincent de Gournay, an economist, by the way, who is credited with defining and encouraging something called laissez-faire economic philosophy, which meant he advocated free trade. Oh yeah, essentially, laissez-faire economic philosophy argued for free trade market dynamics. That is, for the market to be left alone. Jean-Claude Marie Vincent de Gournay opposed state intrusion into transactions taking place between private parties. Huh? He is credited with popularizing the term bureaucracy. The term was constructed by taking the word bureau, which referred to the desk, and then, and by extension, of course, to the government department he served, and then adding to that the Greek suffix kratia, or kratos. And this word means power or rule. It was coined as a term of derision against what was felt to be the tyranny of public officials over the daily lives of the citizens. And it was firmly in place prior to the French Revolution, during which the Bureau presided over the execution of the aristos, the king's household, which might have had something to do with the Spanish use of the word, to identify a court of justice where members of the king's household were tried. Anyway, Jean-Claude Marie Vincent de Gournay was known to say, quote, "We have an illness in France which bids fair to play havoc with us. This illness is called Buromania," end quote. Joining his complaint was German-born French author Friedrich Melchior Baron von Grimm, she'll love these names, who also with him griped about the French obsession with regulation, saying government officials, quote, "refuse to understand that there is infinity of things in a great state with which a government should not concern itself," end quote. And he credited Jean-Claude Marie Vincent de Gournay with the use of the word bureaucracy to identify the tyranny of government officials over the daily lives of the citizens. Now, since then, others have come along, like Max Weber, good old American name, who is, quote, well known for his study of the bureaucratization of society. Hope I said that right. Oh, yeah, well known. You know, it's like everybody knows old Max, you know, Max Headroom Weber. That's actually a pretty good joke, the Max Headroom thing, but I don't have time to explain it. Anyway, Weber believed in bureaucracy and is credited with defining modern bureaucracy. He argued for an impersonal, detached application of abstract procedure, where the focus is entirely on procedure and not on individuals. Procedure is elevated above people in a properly functioning bureaucracy, at least so far as Max Headroom Weber is concerned. And that's why when you go to the county offices here in town, because you file for a DBA, a fictitious business name, to do business in the county, presumably to generate revenue, pay taxes, create jobs, you know, that sort of thing. So you file for a DBA, but being the incredibly busy entrepreneur that you are, you missed your deadline to publish in the newspaper the requisite number of times. And so you go to the bureaucrat in charge of this department and you say, I need an extension on this because, you know, my mom died and I'm moving and I'm trying to establish some economic activity to stimulate the economy, you know, that pays your salary. So can I get an extension? I only missed it by what it looks like 3 days. And the bureaucrat says with a trace of snide sarcasm, "So you want to refile?" And you answer, "Well, no, I'd like an extension." And then she cold cocks you without a moment's hesitation, very impersonal, you know, or with nothing like humanity, like a robot, like Max Headroom. She goes into an automatic mode and says, "Well, you'll have to refile." And this is where she actually gets a little bit excited and pay the full fee again as she turns to walk away. Oh, yeah, that's bureaucracy, baby. But here's the real concern I have with all of this. Of course, we are going to have government departments, at least some of which are actually essential to ordered society, and ergo, you're going to have people who do those jobs. But as they say, if you don't learn from histoire, you are doomed to repeat the mistakes we read about in histoire. Did you know the most successful tyranny the world has known was the Chinese Song Dynasty? And how did the Song family gain such a powerful concentration of power and able to establish such an effective network of oppression to control virtually every aspect of the lives of his subjects? It was through bureaucracy, baby. The fact is, bureaucracy has certain very evil tendencies. And one of them is the tendency toward accumulating more and more control or power over the lives of the people they supposedly are in place to serve. Another tendency is to use that power in service to those in a position to promote their careers. And this tends to concentrate greater and greater power upward up the hierarchy, you see, which it gets passed up higher and higher all the way up to the top so that, almost by magic, bureaucracies solidify the power of whoever is at the top of the department. And these policymakers then are able, through their vast network of bureaucrats, to exert greater and greater control over the lives of private citizens until it becomes unbearable, and then revolt begins to occur. And we're beginning to see that in Wisconsin. When the people attempt to break the tyranny of the bureaucracy, that's when the talons come out and the impersonal bureaucrat becomes very personal and starts, well, you know, just look at Wisconsin to get a taste of what we are in for all across the nation as we the people wake up and begin to challenge the tyranny of the bureaucrat. Friend, it's going to get ugly. These people have been trained to elevate procedure over people. They have subjugated people under their arbitrary procedure for so long. They don't know what to do with people who challenge their procedure. And even more scary for them is when people, annoyed by their procedural tyranny, start actually questioning whether their entire bureau was even necessary. What happens when the people find out they can live without the bureaucrat? In fact, that they can live more free. Now I got to work toward a break here, but let me try to work this knot out a little more thoroughly. Bureaucracy is a necessity insofar as a truly necessary government function requires people to perform the duties necessary to perform that function. Of course, the military is a perfect example of a necessary bureaucracy, if you will. The FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Bureau, serves an essential purpose. The police departments in our states and cities and so forth, fire departments, obviously, our three branches of government need to be staffed, the executive, legislative, and judiciary. And all of these will need staff to support them and so on. And you have to have a hierarchical order of organization to maintain efficiency and so on. We're going to have to deal with a certain amount of bureaucracy. But beyond these, that's about it. Now, wait, I want you to think about this. Take, for example, the Health and Human Services Department under Sebelius. Now, what does she do? She's running a campaign to stop bullying in our society. Yeah, a government agency charged with the job of to run a campaign to stop bullying now. Okay? That's your parents' job. Or the people on the local level. And here's another one. Flu.gov. Yeah, we have $1 billion per year bureaucracy spending its time making sure everybody gets a flu shot. Are you kidding me? Here's another campaign. Let's move. Now, this one's all about raising a healthier generation of kids. What does the government have to... Look, the government has no business sticking its nose into any of this, much less picking our pockets to pay for it. Another useless bureaucracy is the education department. Oh, yeah. It's a massive bureaucracy costing billions of dollars every year. It is a failed program. All the statistics show that our kids were better educated when education was controlled entirely by the state level. And even better... when it was controlled at the county and the city levels. Who does not know that homeschooled kids consistently outperform these kids herded through the bureaucracy? Come on! Now, these are only two of many examples we could bring forward. These bureaucracies are a waste of taxpayer money, and they are a perfect illustration of the dangerous tendencies in bureaucracies. They tend to accumulate more and more control over the particular lives of the people they supposedly serve. And as they do this, more and more power is amassed into the control of those higher up in the hierarchy until they become virtual dictators. Dictatorships used by those higher up to exert more and more control and to amass a broader base of support for themselves. It just never stops. The Environmental Protection Agency is a perfect example and very scary example of this, my friends. Look, let me tell you, when you start waking the people up and they begin to see that these wasteful bureaucracies are breaking the backs of the American people, and just intruding into our personal lives, they're going to get these bureaucrats are going to get vicious, and they're going to mass and attack, dude. Oh, yeah. Now, here's what you need to understand. When public servants are allowed to unionize and collectively bargain, as they put it, it makes them lord over the people. It coalesces their power over the people. As one caller pointed out, thank you, Brother Cherry, when they collectively bargain, they are collectively bargaining against the interests of the people they serve. What's that about? Public servants can't be allowed to do that because what happens is they become governmental tyrants over the people. You can't fire them. You can't restructure their departments or restructure their compensation packages without having them threaten you. They mass together and overwhelm the system and become dictatorial, threatening vengeance and repercussions and intimidating the public they serve. Instead of just going off and getting another job, oh no, they intimidate and threaten to attack. If you allow these public bureaucracies to grow large enough so that a very significant percentage of the voting public are working not for the people but for their union bosses, don't you see you've got the formula for a breakdown in our society? And that's what you're seeing in Wisconsin. Public servants cannot be allowed to unionize because it necessarily makes the bureaucrat, that is the public employee, an employee not of the people but of the union. Loyal to not the people, but their union boss. Not an employee of the people anymore, but an employee of the bureaucracy itself. Watch out. It can't work. The unique nature of bureaucracies is such that if you allow public employees to unionize, you necessarily create an adversarial relationship between the public they serve and those who serve them. You disconnect the public servant from the public, and you connect them instead to their union, which then becomes a bully against the taxpayer. So let's stop the bullying, all right, shall we? We don't need the Department of Education or the Department of Health and Human Services. We don't need any Environmental Protection Agency. Our legislatures can make whatever laws are needed to protect the people's interests in these areas. And our police and court system can prosecute offenders That's the way to handle all of that. Creating these bureaucracies puts the people under the control of unelected, impersonal, unaccountable little demigods, and it's got to stop, okay? Let's start a campaign. Stop these bullying public servants. We don't owe them a job, and we don't work for them. The next time some impersonal bureaucrat blows you off, blow back. Don't let them get away with that nonsense. It only encourages them to become more tyrannical. Remind them that they work for you, and you expect to be treated with respect and for those public servants to do what they can do to accommodate you. Within reason, of course. Now, that's something to think about, isn't it? We need congressional hearings and a thorough inquiry into whether these government departments are actually necessary. Eliminate the ones we don't need. Then look at the ones we do need and conduct a serious inquiry into whether there are redundant or unnecessary auxiliary sub-departments and cut them, baby! But before you do, shutter the windows, reinforce the bulwark, secure the defenses, and prepare for the attack of the public union mob monsters. All right, bottom line, if you don't shrink the bureaucracies in this country, they're going to mass and overwhelm us, you can kiss your freedoms goodbye. I'll be right back.
Want to help us slay the dragons of deceit with the sword of the spirit? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457.
Church is not the place to be trolling for chicks, and it's not a talent show for rockers. So if you want a rock concert, call Ticketmasters. But if you're looking for a church that takes the lordship of Jesus seriously, and you can endure sound doctrine proclaimed straight from the Bible with the preaching that tells it like it is, without fear or compromise, come to the Lighthouse, where we are shining the light of God's truth to help families safely navigate through the moral storms of our day. Call 347-9887 for more information. See our ad in the Coastal Pages Directory.
Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about two, to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, Brain Masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter here, lighting the lamps in the Church Belfry Arch, signaling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. And in case you have not noticed, the lights are burning. I went long on the first segment. I'll have to condense. So let's see. Okay, birther update. Yeah, well, you know, who's surprised to hear Obama is hiding information about Obamacare? I mean, he won't even show us his birth certificate, huh? Now, I don't have time for this one either. Hey, they defunded NPR. Hallelujah. That's long overdue, but very, very welcome. Let's see what the senators do with it, huh? the drive to defund Planned Parenthood revived after a pro-abortion blitz on the Congress. Good. Keep watching that. Business is not buying what Obama's selling. All that rah-rah about breaking our dependence on foreign oil. What a joke. I agree with him. The guy's a pitiful, posturing puppet of Soros and Arab oil interests. And that brings us to Libya. And that's something we need to talk about a little bit. Okay, now, the latest I have on Libya is that the mad dog of North Africa is calling for a ceasefire. Quote, Foreign Minister Moussa Koussa says Libya is declaring an immediate ceasefire and stopping all military operations. And quote, what effected this change? Was it Obama's score in the last 54 holes? Three sets of 18. Or maybe his basketball picks. It was probably when Obama said, now, guys, violence is not nice, and I think you ought not to do it. Anyway. Oh, here you go. Quote, Friday's decision comes after the United Nations voted to authorize a no-fly zone and all necessary measures to protect Libyan people, including airstrikes, end quote. Oh, interesting. During the Benghazi massacre, scores were killed. And Italy says, quote, death toll in Libya is likely over 1,000, end quote. And Italy's foreign minister's assessment is taken seriously because of the close ties between Libya and Italy, historically, and the proximity of the foreign minister there to inside information coming out of Libya. So the cowering mad dog of Libya is not so different from the whimpering dog that tucked his tail and ran for hiding when Reagan sent the bombers in back in 1986, April 14, as a matter of fact. All that was needed was for someone to say, here come the airstrikes. The no-fly zone idea. Remember that one? It was kicked around for a while, way back before 1,000 people were killed. The White House was buzzing about it. Some discussion about it was bantered about. Remember, on March 7, Obama said violence by the government in Libya is unacceptable. Oh, that really stirred him up over there. And he declared, by the way, quote, every option is on the table, end quote. And that's where it stayed with that guy. Remember that? Listen, folks, this is very important. Because only a few days later, March 11, he flip-flopped. He decided to rule out Libyan airstrikes. Quote, Obama rules out Libyan airstrikes, end quote. Yeah. Well, what was that, about 4 days later? At first, President-elect Obama considered the possibility of calling for and enforcing a no-fly zone in Libya so the mad dog could not use his planes to bomb his own people or to maneuver his troops and so on. Obama equivocated. Him, the hod, pondered, said to his caddy, I think I need a pitching wedge for this shot. What do you think? Mr. President? Excuse me, I'm trying to make a shot here. Well, sir, we need a statement about your policy regarding Libya. All right, just hold on. My teleprompter is getting set up, and my press release writers have not yet told me what Soros wants me to... I'm not quite ready. Oh, blast it. Let me finish this shot. I'll get back to you. Caddy, have you made up my mind yet on what club I need for this shot? Then, finally, Obama decides. Well, we are not going to call for a no-fly zone. The UN can do that if it wants. And airstrikes are off the table. Did Soros finally get his call through? Did Jeremiah Wright, the 20-plus year friend of Obama who befriended Gaddafi and visited Gaddafi with Farrakhan, you know, Nation of Islam and all that? Nah. Obama would throw his auntie under the bus, for heaven's sake. And more likely, he decided he does not want to have to go into his reelection bid with his opponent harping about him killing innocent civilians in Libya with an airstrike. And of course, killing them on the cold steel tables of abortuaries, well, that's another thing. You know, by God, he'll risk his entire political career to protect that. You know, but the possibility that civilians might get killed if he called for a no-fly zone and sent in the bombers to enforce it. Well, anyway, so the word goes out, U.S. removes airstrikes from the table. But no, that can't be it either, because Obama watched them kill protesters in Iran without doing anything about it. The only time he gets tough is when the dictator in question is an American ally, Mubarak. And the protest will advance the cause of Sharia law, Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and spread the Muslim call to prayer all across the land. Remember when he nostalgically reminisced about waking to the Muslim call to prayer when he was a child? And he called it the prettiest sound on earth. You have to have seen that clip because, man, he was all choked up and sincere, almost on the verge of tears. It moves him. It touches something in his soul. He loves the Muslim religion. Muslim. If it advances the cause of the Muslim Brotherhood, well, he's for it. Gaddafi is a friend of Wright and Farrakhan and a supporter of murdering Americans. He's an enemy of America. So, you know, look, here's my point. Don't let Obama fool you. If you cross him, he can be deadly. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. That's what bothers me most. Listen, it's either that or he's truly dangerously stupid. No, really, think about this. Everybody knows what happened in 1986 when Reagan sent in the bombers, the airstrikes. Gaddafi became a very well-behaved little puppy. You know, like every bully dictator behaves when they are openly confronted by a power bigger than them. He tucked his tail and ran for cover, whimpering like a scared dog. The one thing we know Gaddafi is afraid of, you know, the one thing we know gets his attention is American air power. Listen, Obama specifically sent out the message that airstrikes were off the table. And that was sic'em to the mad dog in Libya. That's what he did. And Obama's directly responsible for the murder of the 1,000 civilians in Libya, hesitating, equivocating, crawfishing, either as a calculated plan, hoping that mad dog friend of his could break the rebellion and quell the protesters like his friends in Iran have been able to do so far. But he was unable to get it done. So the UN comes along, declares a no-fly zone, and now Libya says that in order to protect the Libyan people from airstrikes, they're going to call for a ceasefire. Obama blew it. He miscalculated this time. Don't let this go, my friends. Gaddafi was hesitant to use his military in an aggressive attack on the protesters. No doubt, what will America do? He sees equivocation, hesitation, confusion in the White House over the situation in Libya. February 20, Gaddafi sends his troops in a measured attack and massacres about 200 in Benghazi. Again, slow response from the White House. A very, very timid response. Obviously, the White House is stumbling about, sending mixed messages March 2. Obama, under pressure now, to say something, declares that all military options are on the table, but makes no commitment. He doesn't mind putting stuff on the table. He just never picks it up off the table, except to put it away. He continues to equivocate. He wants the international community to take the lead. Gaddafi hesitates to commit to a full-scale military operation against the protesters, and he continues his measured attacks. just sort of testing the waters, as it were. And then March 11 comes, and Obama decides to send the message out clearly that America will not use airstrikes against Gaddafi. And Gaddafi goes into full-scale assault on the people. And now 1,000 are estimated to have been killed. The effort to squelch the rebellion fails. UN steps in and declares a no-fly zone. America supports it. Gaddafi throws up the white flag. Think about this. Look, the bottom line is that President-elect Obama is not presidential when it comes to performing in crises, unless you rate his performance by what is in the best interests of America's enemies. Now, I've got to close, but one more thought. Look, we are being given over to the power of our enemies. It's been developing for a while, but now we have a president who, for whatever reason, is bringing America down before our enemies. He is promoting the cause of our enemies around the world. He is strengthening our enemies against us. I wanted to get into Peter King's investigation into the issue of terrorist cells operating in America within the Muslim community. It is a serious concern, but America refuses to see, hear, or speak of the evil in our own backyard. We are presently controlled by the three monkeys of progressivism. See no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, with a twist on the old parable. The progressives refuse to see the evil that is before them. They refuse to hear the truth about the evil that lurks in our midst, and they do everything they can to squelch free speech of others so they can't speak against the evil that surrounds us. Don't fall prey to these foolish monkeys. Wake up. Because when God is preparing to judge a nation, he begins by turning them over to the power of their enemies. So far, our military has proved to be the most terrible force on the planet. One of the next things you will begin to see, if we don't turn around here, and by the way, this will surely signal that we are right at the end of America, as we've known it, is when you begin to see our military starts falling before our enemies. And I'm not talking about Vietnam, I'm talking about Babylon, baby. I don't think that can't happen. There are developments right now that are predictors of the end of our military superiority. Great nations have fallen to lesser nations in the past. Quote, Israel hath... Bible thump alert! Quote, Israel hath sinned, and therefore they could not stand before their enemies. That's not a quote, it's a paraphrase. But hey, if we don't take our military and our government as a whole out of the hand of these ridiculous monkeys, the day will come when it will be said, quote, America hath sinned, therefore she could not stand before her enemies, end quote. A little reminder from Joshua 7. Call me and leave a message on our listener response hotline. It's a free call to anyone within the continental United States. From outside the country, or for those who prefer it, you can email me by going to our website and clicking on the Contact Us button. The easiest address for my brain massage listeners to use is thebrainmassageshow.com. All one word, lowercase, you know the drill, thebrainmassageshow.com. You can give me a lights on or a lights off and then leave your message for me. Remember, if you want me to call or write back, let me know and leave your contact information. God bless you. God save America. I'll see you in church.
How to know if you are a lights on or a lights off listener. If you find yourself suddenly feeling like someone turned on a bright light inside your head, and this is followed by a sense of euphoria, described by some as a feeling that you have just been enveloped into the warm and comforting embrace of the truth, then you are a lights-on listener. However, if you experience sudden bursts of rage, uncontrolled trembling of the lower lip, sweaty palms, and mental disorientation, then you are definitely a lights-off listener. Now that you know what symptoms to look for, call 888-770-8000 and leave your message. Is it lights on or lights off? Call 888-770-8000. The pastor is ready to receive your message. For a complete brain massage experience, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The brain masseur is waiting to massage your brain.